You're listening to Health Savvy You, where understanding health starts with you. I'm Dr. Navjot Butter, a dental surgeon, health communication epidemiologist, and your friend on the journey to better health literacy. In every episode, I break down complex health info, teach you how to spot fake health tips, and share practical tools to help you think clearly, ask smarter questions, and make confident health choices. Keep listening, because becoming healthier shouldn't feel out of reach. It should feel empowering.
Hello, my health savvy folks. How are you? Thank you so much for tuning into today's episode. This will be our first chapter in our new module, How Science Works. If you are new here, I would love for you to explore our previous module, which had 6 chapters on health misinformation and a 7th episode on why health literacy is so important. Make sure you subscribe to continue getting health smarter with us. Health misinformation has become a nuisance for those of us who are trying to stay and get healthy because it leads to so much confusion about what works for our health. And the only way to save ourselves from its harms is to become health savvy. So we focused on misinformation before anything else. And today we take a step further in becoming health smarter about our health by starting to learn how health science really works. So I'm asking you to put on your detective caps on as I tick off harms that this one phenomena, when not used in the right way, can do to our health. I want you to think what it could be. This is something that can delay diagnosis and treatment. It can help with the spread of misinformation. It can waste our money and resources. It can take away trust in health systems and professionals. There could be ethical issues with health research. It can lead to false sense of security about certain health cures, such as those miracle cures. It can lead to public health setbacks like vaccination program rollouts. It can even become a reason for regulatory chaos when it comes to health. Any guesses what I'm talking about? No? Here's another hint. The name of this effect comes from Latin and means "I shall please." In ancient Egypt, when no true cure existed for something, healers used to give patients potions that probably did more for their hope than for their health. And yet, sometimes these potions will cure people. Today, we know this as placebo effect. Give yourself a pat on the back if you guessed it right. So what is the placebo effect? Imagine this. You have got pounding headache. You rummage through your bag, find a pill, pop it in, and miracle of miracles, 30 minutes later, you feel better. Then you discover that pill was just sugar, no medicine, just sweet nothingness. What happened? Did your body just play a magic trick on you? Welcome to the weird, wonderful, and sometimes slightly mysterious world of placebo effect. At its simplest, the placebo effect is when someone experiences real improvement in symptoms after receiving a treatment that has no active therapeutic ingredient. That sugar pill, that saline injection, even a sham surgery, where doctors make an incision but don't actually do the procedure. In other words, here's something to make you feel better even if it doesn't actually do anything medicinal. And yet, people really do feel better. Their pain ease, their symptoms improve, sometimes dramatically. That's the wild, confusing part. There is no reason for the placebo to cure the issue, yet patients report feeling better. Sometimes their bodies even show measurable biological changes like lower blood pressure or changes in brain activity. Today, placebo isn't just a curiosity, it's a cornerstone of medical research. When new drugs are tested, they are almost always compared against a placebo. Why? Because if patients improve on a sugar pill, then the new medicine has to do better than that to prove it actually works. Without this, we wouldn't know if improvements are thanks to the drug or just the powerful expectation of healing. There is also nocebo effect. The nocebo effect is mischievous twin of placebo effect. While placebo makes people feel better after an inert treatment, nocebo makes people feel worse simply because they expect negative effects. For example, if someone is told that a harmless sugar pill might cause nausea, they may actually experience queasiness, headaches, or other symptoms, even though the pill contains no active ingredients. Both placebo placebo and nocebo shows just how powerful our mind is in shaping our bodily experiences. I do want you to remember that when we are talking about placebo or nocebo effects, we are talking about remedies that do not have any medicinal properties or active ingredients. We are talking about something that should effectively have no effect on illness, but it does. So as you listen to this one, do not confuse it with actual true medicinal treatments. Is your mind curious to know how placebos work? If yes, then my apologies, but science still hasn't fully understood the process. There are various theories about how this may happen, and that's what I'm about to share with you. First is our expectation. When we expect relief, the brain doesn't just make a pep speech. It triggers our top-down control systems that can reduce pain and tune our bodily signals. In placebo analgesia or placebo pain relief, for example, our expectation to feel less pain can make our brain release endogenous opioid and dopaminergic pathways. The brain's own pharmacy is at work to help us feel less pain. This isn't imaginary relief. It's measurable neurobiology driven by belief and context. Second is learning or conditioning. If taking a pill in the past has really helped you with feeling better, your nervous system or your brain learns that association. Later, even an inert pill, but if it's similar looking, can create a learned response. Less pain, calmer gut, steadier heart rate. Prior experiences and cues, pill color, clinic setting, etc., teach the brain what to expect and the body follows. This learning perspective also explains why placebos don't affect everyone the same way. Different past experiences mean different predictions, and individual biology matters too. Our genetic differences can modulate these learned and expectancy-based responses, further shaping who responds and how strongly. Third is meaning, or the story that we're living in. That is how the symbols, rituals, and relationships of care influence outcomes. A white coat, a respectful conversation, a carefully labeled bottle. These carry meanings like, this is serious, you are safe, help is coming. As patients, we don't just ingest pills. We also take in the story around the pill, and the body responds to that meaning. Research says that if we fixate on the object, such as the sugar pill, we miss the human context doing a lot of the work. This is for my physician friends out there. By reframing placebo as meaning response, you can intentionally shape explanations, empathy, and ritual to support healing alongside evidence-based treatments. Fourth is context and cues. That is, tiny signals, big effects. Put expectation, learning, and meaning together, and you get context effects, the small signals that nudge our biology. How confident does the clinician sound? How coherent is the rationale? Does the setting feel professional and safe? These cues inform our brain's predictions, which tune our control pathways. Part of why two identical treatments can have different effect on different people depending on how those treatments are delivered to them. But why doesn't placebo work the same for everyone? Why don't we all feel better after the sugar pill? Here's the catch. Because placebo effects are a mix of natural history, measurement quirks, and genuine psychobiological and neurobiological responses, they show variability across conditions and studies in different people. While we were discussing how placebos work, did you think of any time this happened with you? Let's check out some real-life, everyday examples and tell me if you have ever experienced them. First, when we have got a cold, many of us swear by chicken soup. Scientifically, it's just warm, hydrating, and comforting, but not a cure for virus itself. Still, people report feeling soothed, their stuffy nose clearing, even their mood lift. Studies have also shown that many patients feel that branded medications, yes, that more expensive version, work better than generics, even though chemically they are identical. The logo, the packaging, the price tag, all creates a placebo boost for us. Like, if you're someone who loves their skincare routine, you might be going through placebo effect with the expensive skincare because many of us feel a positive change in skin when using a new expensive skincare product, even if the ingredients are similar to cheaper options. The belief in product's effectiveness and the expectation of glowing skin can amplify the perceived results we get. If you're into self-help books, that feeling a sense of accomplishment or clarity after following a self-help ritual like journaling, the expectation of positive outcomes can enhance their perceived impact. We can find placebo effect in our elevators. When you press that button to close the elevator door, you get a feeling that it worked and the doors closed quicker. However, the truth is that in the United States, there is a law that elevator doors must stay open for someone with disability so that no one is left behind. Test it next time you take the elevator. If as a kid, you ever scraped your knee and your mom gave you a kiss there, tell me, did you feel any better after that? That's just a child's belief in healing power of the kiss that is enough to take the pain away. Something close really happened with me. I remember as a kid, maybe 8 or 9 years old, I cut my foot on a piece of grass. My uncle, trying to calm me down, sprayed perfume on the wound and told me it was a special painkiller he had just bought. Now, logically, perfume should sting, or at least do nothing at all. Yet, I felt relief after that. Looking back, I love how ridiculous that was, but at the time it worked. And that little moment has stayed with me as a lovely memory and a perfect example of the placebo effect in action. Is it placebo-like magic? It's also incredibly useful in scientific research because unlike in daily life, in research, the placebo is no accident. It's a deliberate, carefully designed tool. So why placebos are crucial for research? When scientists test a new treatment, they need to know if it really works or if improvements are just due to expectation, natural healing, or some bias. That's why we do randomized controlled trials or RCTs with placebos. Yes, we will talk about RCTs in detail later in the module, but for now, randomization means participants are randomly assigned to treatment or placebo. And double-blind means neither participants nor researchers know who got what until results are analyzed. This design prevents unconscious bias and reveals whether a new drug truly outperforms placebo. But here's the limit. If there's already a proven effective treatment, it's unethical to give a placebo instead, especially for serious conditions like cancer, HIV, or diabetes. International guidelines like Declaration of Helsinki say placebos can only be used when patients aren't denied effective care or when withholding therapy doesn't pose serious risks. So if we already have a pill that cures you in, say, 5 days, a new pill doesn't need to be compared to the sugar pill or a placebo. It needs to beat that 5-day pill. Otherwise, we'd be needlessly delaying people's recovery. Placebo-controlled trials are clean science, but only when there's no effective treatment that exists. So yes, as first, placebo-controlled trials are cleaner science. By using placebos carefully, researchers avoid overestimating benefits. Without them, a drug might look effective simply because people expect to. Placebos are like the control in a science experiment, the baseline that helps us measure the truth. However, when we already have an effective treatment, using placebos may not be the most ethical choice for further treatment experiments. No, I didn't forget. I remember that I started today's conversation with many dangers of placebo effect. But placebo itself isn't dangerous. It's misusing it or misunderstanding it that can definitely harm us, and here's how that can happen. One, misusing it in ethics and in debates. Especially, you might have heard people saying every vaccine must be placebo-controlled. But like we learned, once an effective vaccine exists, withholding it just to test a new one against salt water is unethical. If regulators had insisted on placebo trials for updated COVID boosters, we might still be locked down without protection against all the new variants. That's a real risk we put ourselves in. Two, substituting placebo for proven care, like choosing sugar pills or natural remedies over chemotherapy or antibiotics, may soothe you temporarily, but the disease continues unchecked. This may irk many when I say, but homeopathy is a prime example. The caring consultation, the ritual of taking the remedy, the confidence people have in the provider, homeopathy is actually just a powerful placebo. There is no evidence, till date, of actual disease-altering effect. At best, it works through placebo. At worst, it delays or replaces real treatment, leading to serious harm. 3. Selling hope and draining our wallets. Placebo is often repackaged and sold as miracle cures. If I had bottled that perfume my uncle sprayed on my cart and sold it as instant pain relief, I could have made money while misleading people into skipping Tylenol or actual first aid. It's a trick, not a treatment. You may think you will never fall for perfume as painkiller, but trust me, there are many perfumes being sold as painkillers, and we trust them every day in the name of natural or alternate healing. 4. Confusing feeling better with getting better. Feeling comforted is not the same as curing disease. When people use their personal placebo-driven improvement as proof and spread it as medical advice, it misinforms others and puts them at risk. And we need to safeguard ourselves against these kind of examples. The bigger lesson, why I wanted to start this module with placebo effect, is because it shows us how messy science is and how much of it is still under construction. Placebo is real. It can ease pain, lower anxiety, and create comfort. But science doesn't fully understand how it works, and placebo doesn't treat underlying disease. So just because something worked for few people doesn't mean it should be prescribed to everyone. If we built medicine on personal stories and placebo effects, we'd put a lot and lots of lives at risk. That's why we need to hold all treatments, whether pharmaceutical or alternative, to the same rigorous standards. No double standards here, no bias. If you demand proof from doctors and scientists about drugs and vaccines, then demand the same proof for homeopathy and supplements and every other health. Because at the end of the day, your health deserves more than magic tricks. This was all for today. And in the next episode, we are going to tackle another common source of confusion: the scientific definitions in healthcare that many of us mix up or don't really know what they mean. But misunderstanding them can lead to dangerous health decisions. We'll unpack them, clear up the confusion, and give you tools to be savvier health thinker. I will see you in 2 weeks. Until then, stay savvy, stay healthy.
Thank you for tuning into Health Savvy You. I hope today's episode brought you one step closer to feeling confident, curious, and in control of your health. If you found this episode helpful, share it with someone you care about. Keep learning, and remember, health literacy is for everyone, including you. Be sure to follow or subscribe so you never miss a new episode. I have got more great conversations coming your way. See you next time, and until then, stay savvy, stay healthy.